I am joined now, as always, on Thursdays by Barry Shuck of Dogs by Nature. Barry, how are you doing this evening?
Doing well. It's one of those days that when they say the temperature is one thing, but it feels like another, you know you're either in the dead of summer or it's the dead of winter.
Yep. I don't know. Is there one that you have that's more unfortunate? I think in Florida, you would say the summertime is more unfortunate, but me being from the Midwest, I would say the winter one is probably worse than the summer version.
Yeah, the winter is something that either you grew up north and you transplanted here because, you know, this is a Navy town, so people are from everywhere.
Right.
Or, you know, it's used, but that's usually what it is because here we only have two seasons, hot and hotter.
Yeah, and I've realized that over the little bit more than a year that I've been here, and looking forward to another great hot summer as we always are here in the Panhandle. But Barry, one of the hot topics, speaking of hot, that's been going around in the National Football League is this deal with Deshaun Watson. It's still coming up, but more details with one of the pretrial depositions. Deshaun Watson essentially admitting that one of the massage therapists, after they were done with the session, was crying, and he claims that he didn't know why, had reached out to her afterwards, and she, according to the report, did not respond back at all whatsoever. I have a feeling that Deshaun may know, but is this anything that is worth looking into more, or is this just a part of these depositions where we're going to hear from all of these 22 accounts, and Deshaun's going to have to explain himself for every single one of them?
Yeah, and of course, the timing of this is basically to fit around his time with the Browns and time that he's supposed to be there as far as, you know, the mini camps, which all teams have mini camps. Mm. Some of them are mandatory and some of them are voluntary. But he has started with his depositions. Of course, all of these are in Texas. And the league seeks to determine if he violated the NFL personal conduct policy, and if so, whether discipline should be imposed. And if that's imposed, is that this year or is it next year? Because none of these civil suits and none of these trials are going to begin until March of next year. That was worked out with the attorney for the 22 women. His name is Tony Busby. He worked it out with Deshaun's camp that all of this would be happening after the season is completely over. So Cleveland Brown fans and reporters such as myself have just assumed that the NFL would wait not until all the depositions are done, but until all these civil suits are either tried or they're settled out of court.
Which, yeah, and that's very interesting because over the last couple of days, I've heard there's a number of people who have said, you know, there's a little bit of pressure on the NFL to act on this. But and you almost wonder, because Deshaun Watson was scheduled to meet with the NFL this week, if there is there a situation, and Mike Florio of NBC Sports had I guess at first that I heard come up with this idea that the NFL may suspend Deshaun just out of, hey, this is what we know, this is our conduct policy, we're going to suspend him this year for this amount of time. Then when the trials are done and everything is concluded, based on what we find or any of the other findings, we may suspend him again for the next year. Is that a possibility, or do you think they're either going to suspend him now and then be done with it, or they're going to wait and suspend him next year and then be done with it?
Yeah, I think it'd be surprising if they suspended him at all this year. Now, once they get all these civil suits tried, and they're not going to be tried 22 women all at the same time, they're going to be 22 different suits. And, of course, all these trials are going to take a long time. This could take years. But if he's going to be suspended, the NFL has to have and must have some kind of concrete evidence that Deshaun has really done something wrong. Now, at this point, the only big news that has come out of his pretrial deposition is that he made one of those women cry, and he stated in his deposition that after his massage session was over with, he made a woman cry. Now, so far, that's the only thing the NFL has to go by. Now, why was she crying?
Right.
What made her cry? Did he make her cry? But if the NFL is going to suspend players for making women cry, then you just suspend the whole league.
Right.
We all do it.
Yeah. This is the interesting thing too. So you're talking about how say the NFL waits. The Browns pay him $1 million this year. So he's playing for $1 million. If you look at next year, he's scheduled to make $46 million in salary. If they suspend him the whole season next year, then essentially, I don't know if this is kind of screwing the Browns over in this way, but if that were to happen, they will have paid him $1 million along with that signing bonus they gave him this year to play. And the next year, if he didn't play, say he suspended all 16 or 17 games, they're going to be paying him $46 million to sit on the bench.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he'll be paid with the suspension or not. It depends on the conditions of the suspension. Sometimes it's with pay. Most of the time it's without. You take people like in law enforcement, they'll get suspended or they'll get regulated to a desk job. Well, that's with pay until the whatever investigation or shooting or whatever comes about. But with him, if he gets suspended, most likely it would be without pay. Now, the Browns did him a solid by this year making his salary $1.35 million for this year. They were expecting that some of these civil suits would be going on during the season and Deshaun would be going from Cleveland to Texas and Cleveland to Texas and crisscrossing that part of the country. But when Tony Busby came out and made an offer to put all this off until March of 2023, that kind of changed the diameter of the situation and basically just kind of threw the Browns for a loop.
I think that, if you're the Browns or if you're Deshaun Watson, wouldn't you almost rather it be delayed until 2022? Because if you're thinking that, for example, if the Browns are in Cincinnati to play the Bengals, then you got to fly to Houston and deal with this. Then you got to fly back and be ready to play a game. I mean, as far as watching film, I don't know if he's going to be able to do any of this. Like, how is it almost better for Deshaun and for the Browns that they're waiting until the spring of next year to do this? Or do you think the Browns are under the impersonation it would be better to just try to get these things done and over with as soon as possible?
Well, Drew, right now the pretrial depositions are happening around his football schedule.
Okay.
That was predetermined when they put all this off until March of next year. When he's not having to work out or not having to go to mini camps or not go to training camp, which, you know, is usually the third week in July, then he has the opportunity and the time to do depositions. And of course, with 22 cases, there'll be 22 depositions because all the cases filed are different. So right now, that's all he's doing is he's going back. Now, whether he's doing a deposition a day or two a day or three a day or one every other day, we don't know that yet. But here's the thing. What is odd to me, Drew, is if I was the attorney for these 22 women, exactly what you said, if he's got a game and he's prepping for Cincinnati and his day off is on Monday or on a Tuesday, then he's got to fly to Texas and do a deposition. Then he's got to fly back. And if he does that repeatedly all during the season, to me, that would put pressure on Deshaun.
Oh, yeah.
To just say, you know what, I'm sick of this. Let's just stop it. Let's just, here, I'll just make a settlement. Here's what we'll pay. And whether I'm guilty or not, I've said I'm not guilty, but I just want to be done with it. It seems to me that would be an extreme amount of pressure being put on Deshaun. Now, why Busby agreed to put it off in March? Something obviously had to be given to Busby to make him agree to put all this off for a year, because otherwise Deshaun's just got nothing but pressure on him constantly.
And it almost makes you think, I wonder if he's trying to salvage time to try to get something on Deshaun anymore for the women. I have no idea. And again, I don't think any of us are really going to know the total and complete truth of this deal. But jumping from Deshaun to Baker specifically, he's still been traded. Is there any inkling that he's actually going to stay with the Browns? Because say he is suspended this year, does it make sense that the Browns, given the roster, would try to play Baker and win now? And maybe that could even be a blessing in disguise for Baker, because nobody wants him, it seems like, right now. As far as what I've heard, there's a lot of teams who would take him if he was cut, but they don't want to trade for him and have to pay his salary. Is that correct?
Well, they wouldn't have to pay his salary. The Browns would have to pay the salary. He's going to make $18.858 million, and they're on the sly for that. So they will definitely have to pay his salary. But here's the reason why they're not going to cut him is because they would cut him, and he would get paid that money anyway, and then he would be playing for somebody and getting that money in addition to. So there's no reason for them to cut him. So they can't trade him. Although, you know, Seattle seems to still be in play. I think the biggest news is maybe Carolina still wants him. And even though they drafted Matt Corral and they've got Sam Darnold on the list and maybe Cam Newton, even though he's not on the roster, I think what's going to happen here is that the Browns are going to keep him. I think he'll be on the roster day one, game one. I think if he gets suspended, which I think is unlikely this year, that they've got a backup plan in place. But I think their real plan for Baker Mayfield is right now they have zero leverage in trading him. So when somebody's quarterback goes down or somebody's quarterback gets hurt or gets suspended or gets put on COVID for a month or whatever, that would make him have some value. Now, originally they wanted a first-round pick. They changed that to a second-round pick. It's possible they could get a third-round pick for him when somebody's starter goes down and he's an NFL starting quarterback and then they trade for him. But right now, I think all they're really going to get for him is a fifth or sixth round and a bag of footballs.
I'm with you in that regard. He didn't show enough last year. I mean, say this all happened last year, before last year started. Do you think his market would have been any different, given that he had just recently been to the AFC Championship game and had played really well? And Joe Burrow actually was on a podcast and said that Baker balled out whenever they played the Browns. That Baker played really, really well. So as far as Joe's concerned, Baker's still a really good quarterback, which I found to be interesting.
Yeah, when he played, and really he only had one half of one season that he played really, really good. Every other time he did not play good. So you've got he's going into his fifth year, and he's only had one half of one year. Now, last year what they should have done is when he got hurt, they should have just took care of the injury and put him on IR and had surgery. And when he gets better, then he comes back, if he comes back, and they just deal with it. I mean, everybody – that has happened. I remember Tom Brady one year going down in the first game and Matt Castle, his backup, came in, and that's just what they did. And that happens all the time. Look at when Joe Burrow went down, not last year but the year before. Having a great season in his rookie campaign, he went down, and that's just – you just have to deal with it and hope that you've got a starting-ready – backup in place, and you've made the right decision of who the backup would be. I think for Baker, though, is right now he just can't play the victim. Victimization has to be put into a bottle and buried in the ground, because it's just too easy to play the victim. Look, there's a lot of things out of your control and a lot of things that probably he's been doing wrong, but you cannot in the NFL survive and play the victim. You just got to leave it behind and own every bit of it.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with Baker and where he goes, because is he good enough to be a starter? I would say so myself, and I think others would definitely as well. I want to hit one more point, Barry, before I let you go. Davante Adams.
Sure.
So he goes to the Raiders, and we know this, and the whole deal of Aaron knew ahead of time and all this, there or that and the other, that it was going to be that Devontae was likely leaning the other way. But I found this interesting. I saw a report that Davante Adams was offered more money actually to stay in Green Bay, but decided to still go to Oakland to Las Vegas. Is this solely because of Derek Carr, or do you think that there, and it seems to be like there's, I don't want to call it a trend in sports in general, but players want to play with their friends a little bit, and not to say that Davante Adams doesn't want to win a Super Bowl or any of that, but playing with your friends and playing with people you're comfortable with, I think this is his one chance to go and play with Derek Carr and their best friends going back to their time at Fresno State. Does it make sense why Davante Adams would go to Las Vegas, even though he was offered more money by Green Bay? Or are you a little bit surprised that he didn't stay and take the money that he was being offered to play with Aaron Rodgers again?
Yeah, I think maybe at his juncture and his age, to me, it may not be necessarily the money aspect of it more so than the opportunity to win a ring. And I think in his case, I would have looked at Vegas and playing with his best friend, or look at the Packers and saying, okay, which of these two do I think has the better chance to go to the Super Bowl and win a championship? Well, the obvious answer is Green Bay. Not that Las Vegas
right.
can't do something this year, but you know, that division, everybody's going to shoot each other, just like the SEC. Everybody's
yeah.
going to beat each other up and defeat each other. It's going to be the toughest division. So you play six games against already tough competition, because even Denver's going to improve. We know the Chiefs are going to be, top of the heat in AFC royalty. And the Chargers, you know, are up and coming and doing a good job. But that's the way I would look at it. Now, he didn't. He accepted less money from the Raiders to avoid playing for the Packers for another year. Now, would he play under the franchise tag for the Packers, who offered him a deal? I think maybe the Packers offered Davante Adams a bigger deal over the first 2 years than the Raiders did. He just really, I just think he just didn't want to be there.
Mm.
You know, although Adams grew up supporting the Raiders and Derek Carr, the decision to agree to a deal that's for less money really comes off as surprising. Adams' agents revealed the Packers' offers that was more, and it was a dream for him to play not only with Derek Carr, but it was a dream for him to play in the silver and black. Now, I found that kind of odd right there. You know, he's been an all-pro and NFL receiving leader in 2020, and he's arguably the best receiver in football.
Yeah, well, and I think that, yeah, again, to go back to that point of his dream to play on the Raiders, and look, if not everybody, I'm not going to say that not everybody has got that itch to win a title, because I think Davante Adams does, but when an opportunity like that comes up, I mean, he obviously chose to fulfill that dream as opposed to be in the spot, as you said, that would be the better one in terms of competing for a title, because Aaron Rodgers is still Aaron Rodgers. The Packers are still going to be one of the top teams in the NFC, and the NFC is a lot less loaded than the AFC is. So all the signs would, again, point to Green Bay, and that's where I thought when this whole deal went down is like, oh, man, like the Packers or the – I want to hear that the Packers offered more money, I think, was surprising in the fact that, okay, so not only is the team better, the situation to win is better, but they offered more money. You must have a really darn good reason to go – to want out and to go to the Raiders in particular, which it seems like he does, and if that makes Davante happy, then obviously that is a good thing, but definitely surprising. Do you think the Raiders, is there a window for the Raiders to try to win? Because, as you said, Davante, not getting up there in age, but he's a little bit older now. Derek Carr the same way. I mean, he's getting up to 30. Is there a window for the Raiders to even try to get this thing done, given how tough the division is and everything like that?
Well, they realize that they either got to sink or swim. So they're doing all they can. Now, they've had some problems with some draft picks. Cleveland Farrell just didn't work out. He was picked number 4 overall a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And that just didn't work out at all. And then they're having problems with their running back from Alabama. So they decided that they had to do something different. So they got to get younger, and they've got to get cheaper as well. Because, you know, draft picks are going to be the cheapest route than anything else. But they got Zamir White, the running back of Georgia, in round 4 at number 122 overall. And I think that's going to be a really, really good choice. I think he's going to supplant Jacobs. And Jacobs' contract is coming up. And that's probably the biggest thing in their draft pick. They also got Neil Farrell Jr., the defensive lineman from LSU, big-bodied guy, just a run stopper, and so they focus more on the defensive side of the line more than the offensive side. But they've got to get cheaper in some areas. And running back, even though Jacobs was a former first rounder, it looks like now they're replacing him with Zamir White, the running back out of Georgia, who was taken in the fourth round for fourth round money.
Oh, there we go. And again, yeah, this is where, you know, you get to save some money. And the Bengals are in that great position to not have to owe their players any money, so they don't have to deal with anything quite yet. But, Barry, I appreciate the time as always. You have a good rest of your weekend. I'll talk to you next week.
Hey, you want to hit him?
Yeah, let's do it since we have time today.
I want to give you how the word bowl came into football.
Okay.
We all know that the Super Bowl is one of America's greatest unofficial holidays, and it's been coined similar to the numerous college postseason contests that are all called bowl games, Orange Bowl, Sugar Bowl, Cotton Bowl. We all know that. Well, in the early 1900s, most playing fields were open-ended on one end or on both ends, with all the fans being on the center portions opposite the 50-yard line and so on. Well, in 1913, Charles Ferry, Yale class of 1871, designed a new stadium shaped in a bowl configuration to which the Yale Bowl Stadium was constructed and opened in 1915.
Oh, that was
the first coining of the word bowl. When in 1922, the famous Rose Bowl Stadium was built, and at the conclusion of the season, they held the first annual postseason game they called the Rose Bowl Game. Now, other stadiums would soon follow suit by calling their postseason contests various bowl games. And the NFL, because the NFL, a lot of things the NFL does, emulates what college football did.
Mm-hmm.
So the NFL has the Pro Bowl. In the 60s and into the 70s, they had something called the Playoff Bowl, which was the third and fourth place teams playing each other. And, of course, their championship game is called the Super Bowl. But it all came from a Yale stadium being called the Yale Bowl. And then when the Rose Bowl Stadium opened up, they started their game, and they called it the Rose Bowl.
I think that is awesome, going all the way back to the beginning there with Yale, which that dates back Yale football all the way into the 1800s. So phenomenal as always, Barry. Good to get some history of the game as well. Again, sorry to cut you off, but we definitely have time for the idiom today. But nonetheless, you have a good rest of the week, and I'll talk to you next week.
Same to you, my friend. Talk to you later.